Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the Cazoo Open de France from the stunning Le Golf National. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners age 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. As mentioned, we've got a couple of stars headlining this week and joining me to look at the Cazoo Open de France. That's Tom Jacobs, who's the host of Lost for Words podcast, and Dave Tindall, a freelance golf writer for many publications, including Betfair and The Guardian. Before we get into all the action from France, we've got to look back at Wentworth, the BMW PGA Championship. And in one of those freelance golf articles, Dave Tindall, we're actually going to start the Fortinet because we've got to start with winners. And Sahith Theegala, now you were on him, as was Ben Goley, but we ran out of time on the podcast to get him to mention it, but it was in his article, but he was also in yours. So pretty good weekend for you.
Yeah, not too bad. Fairly stress-free, actually. He was 16-1 Theegala. Sometimes you think it's a little bit short for a guy who's never won before, but it was a fairly weak field and he had really solid credentials. That event seems to be won by guys from California quite a lot, so he joined that club. He did it well. He sort of a good front-running performance by him. His driving looked a little bit wonky to start with, and you thought that might catch him out, but in the end, he just had sort of too much game for everybody else and won it nicely.
Yeah, he absolutely did. It was good to see the return of the PGA Tour. And I think it's fair to say his cast of 1,000 supporting him that you saw in every video may have helped get him over the line. So that was a return. But on the other side of the Atlantic was, well, I want to say it was an epic tournament. And it really was. And so exciting. But one person who may disagree is Tom Jacobs. As at one stage, he basically had all three leaders. And then, well, Tom, you talk us through it and what exactly happened at Wentworth.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think when you take a chance on people that perennially don't win at bigger odds, I suppose you kind of expect these things. But Conor Simon was in the final group. Masahiro Kawamura was at 300-1. He was in, you know, he was only two or three shots back at one point, really making a charge. And Tom Kim was, it felt like there all day and it never really materialised in the end. And when you look at the final leaderboard of them finishing kind of 10th, 18th and whatever, Masahiro Kawamura finished in the end, you feel a little bit silly. But they were all there. The kind of right selections were in. Brendan Todd finished inside the top six for me at the Fortinet, so that was okay as well. But it was just one of those weeks where it felt like we were on the right lines, but not quite the right results, and that's obviously not enough for betting purposes. So we'll quickly move on and hopefully find a winner in France this week.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Hopefully we do have that, and it gets name-checked in the pod. On Wentworth, how much did you enjoy watching it, Dave? It's always a cracking event, and there were some, as we saw from the video from Ryan Fox, the winner, some amazing names up there. What did you make of it this year?
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? It looked for a while as if Arberg was just going to win again, and he said, wow, what have we got on our hands here? But it's interesting to see that, you know, sometimes the golf gods go, hang on a minute, you know, you can't just turn up and start winning everything like you're a seasoned pro. And it's sort of noticeable if you trust him with Rahm. Aberg got off to a terrible start on round four, and that was it. He couldn't recover it. Where Rahm a couple of times got off to terrible starts and just thought, I'm just going to come back at this, and just kept going for it. And I backed Rahm at halfway, actually, at 12-1, got an each-way return. But yeah, it just showed maybe that, you know, you do need a bit more experience just to win them. Maybe, I don't know whether it was just, it will inevitably happen if you just keep leading. Unless you're Tiger Woods, you don't just always convert a 54-hole lead. But in a big event like that, it was a little bit revealing that he couldn't change gears once it had gone wrong, whereas Rahm very much could. So, I just hope there's no sort of repercussions in terms of the Ryder Cup.
Absolutely right. Speaking of the Ryder Cup, I mean, we'll talk about it later, but by God, there are a lot of names up there who features very exciting for Team Europe, and we'll get onto that on the end. But someone who seemingly almost came from nowhere to get it done, talk about a struggle start, triple bogey in there for Foxy, but the great man gets it done. Tom, were you how surprised were you? Because looking at his form at Wentworth, didn't seem to say there'd be necessarily too much. And he's had some injury as well recently. So what were you surprised at all? Can you see it in retrospect as a bit of a fit for him? What do you make of it?
it's interesting, actually, because like with Ryan Fox, he had the couple of second place finishes at the Irish Open across various events. So him finishing, you know, up there at the Irish Open the week before wasn't too surprising, right? And then you look at his Wentworth form and you do think, well, you know, he's predominantly a great driver of the golf ball, but maybe that's negated slightly because he's got a, you know, club down, and that might be, you know, impacting his chances this week. And the course figures kind of led to that. So, yeah, there was an element of surprise. And I think the other thing with Ryan Fox that I think we should really sort of tap into is just how impressive he's been over the last kind of 12 to, you know, 18 months. This is a player that, you know, predominantly got knocked for not being able to get over the line, and all of a sudden he's done it four or five times. And, you know, he's just tremendous, isn't he? I think he's been great and, you know, pretty solid on the PGA Tour all season, came back onto the DP World Tour after this, you know, illness and break. I think he had a child as well. Like, he's just been superb. And to do what he did, I actually thought he should have won the week before the Irish Open. So I think that there was a, you know, a shadow of an old Ryan Fox there. And then all of a sudden you see that the 2022 Ryan Fox at Wentworth yesterday. And again, you'd probably look at someone like Tyrrell Hatton and say maybe he should have won. But I think the best thing overall from Wentworth and the takeaway I would have is when you've got Ryan Fox, Aaron Rye, Tyrrell Hatton, John Rahm, Victor Hovland, Tommy Fleetwood, Rory McIlroy and Adam Scott making up the top seven. Callum Shinkman chucked in there for good measure as well. Like, you've got a ball striker's paradise, right? And it actually does separate the best players from the kind of kiddies, if you like. So I think, you know, it's just an absolute spectacle for Wentworth and the DP World Tour in general. So I was really impressed with that. I was really impressed with, you know, various players, really. I think that someone like Henny Duplessis has been carrying on good form. Conor Syme, obviously, until the final round, carrying on his good form as well. And as we sort of touched on before, like, Ludvig Åberg has been spectacular in his short time on the DP World Tour. So, yeah, I think it was a great event. It was lovely to see Ryan Fox win. He seems to be one of those good guys that everyone seems to follow and support. So, yeah, really happy for him and good to see.
Yeah, it was a thrilling spectacle, as you say. And I mean, I was watching the last finish there, and I don't know how Aaron Rye's putt still missed at the end. I mean, the arm up slow-mo, I thought it was all going to happen. But the two par fives of finish make it very exciting indeed. But that's in the past. And this week we move on again, and it's time to get into the French Open. It's just one tournament this week with a little break on the PGA Tour schedule again. So let's get into it and find out a bit more about the course and who you guys are picking. Yes, that's right. We're back at Le Golf National. A bit of Ryder Cup flavour as we were there just a few years ago for that famous European win. It is a par 71, just over 7,200 yards. Obviously did host that 2018 Ryder Cup, which was won by 17.5 to 10.5 points by Europe. Traditionally, a pretty high scoring event. It is not easy. And we mentioned last week on the podcast, I think it was Kit saying, how good, maybe one of the shots of the year, Guido's last year to get it done. That was as high as low as 16 under, which is very impressive. And it's a good field. Only Bob McIntyre is in the field about the European Ryder Cup team, trying to find some form ahead of, I can't believe I'm saying this, but next week, which is really, really exciting. But let's get into the course, Dave. And as I mentioned, a lot of people remember Ryder Cup. That's what it's known for. How differently are you expecting this to play in terms of look and feel and scoring? Because obviously we always hear about the American proofing and we remember how hard it was, especially that finishing stretch. What are you expecting this week and how much will you look into that?
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times actually. I went in, I'd lost track of to Google this when I'd gone out. 2010, when they made the Ryder Cup bid, I got invited over and sat on the same table as Jean van der Velden, a lovely meal with him. What a great guy he is, by the way. So that was a good experience. And I did think then this is a great course. I actually got to play it on one of the days, and that didn't go so well. I think I hit four balls into the water on 18. You know, not an easy hole. It wasn't for me anyway. But then the Ryder Cup, yeah, as you say, how sort of European proofed or US proofed was it? Because it's certainly, you know, they maybe exaggerated the rough. There are some interesting kind of parallels when you look at it. It's certainly got a linksy feel to the course, and that can be reflected in who's done well there. But it's also, I've noticed a real sort of link between the course and the US Open in terms of who played well there. Because when Migliozzi won, it was like, well, why has he won there? Because it doesn't make an awful lot of sense. And I didn't know that he's done really well in recent US Opens, fourth in 2021, 14th in 2022. And you would have, if it was a quiz question, name a player who's come top 15 in the last two US Opens. Migliozzi, unless you really keep your eye on the ball, you wouldn't have guessed him. But then you go down previous winners at Le Golf National. You've got GMAT winning it twice, US Open winner. Martin Keimer won there, a great record there, US Open winner. Retief Goosen won there, two-time US Open winner. Monty and Fleet would have won there. They've both come runner-up in the US Open. So I think it's possibly a little bit of style in there, but it certainly that's that kind of mental grind that it puts on a player. And also I think the other, maybe playing-wise, I think you've got to really scramble well, and you've always got to do that well in the US Open. It really does test the short game excellence. So I think looking at US Open form, even though it perhaps isn't your first thought, is a decent way to come at this. So, yeah, I expect scoring to be fairly tough, and maybe guys have done well in the US Open before. There isn't a lot of them, to be fair, but that could be a little hint.
Nice. I mean, we normally talk about course comparisons, but this is full-blown just event, which I like, and a new angle in there. Tom, we've just spoken about Wentworth there and how that seemed to really favour recent form over course form. It's fair to say with like Fox, and you mentioned Duplessis. Which side would you take this week if you prefer one? Would you be looking more recent, or do you think the experience playing it and going there, like we saw with Justin Thomas when he went early and did well, is important?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, because generally speaking with a course like this, I would lean on course form, and over the years it's generally been something I've done, and you know, with varying results, like you do try to tap into those kind of things, and there's always an argument, right, that people think that the short prices are factored in because of course form, and if they've not played well for 3 years, why does it matter? And there is an element of that. So I am slowly leaning towards the current form aspect of it. But I think if you haven't got the current form necessarily, one, there's a correlating course that I do like, which is Celtic Manor, which I'll go into a little bit more. And also what Dave said there about the US Open is really interesting, because it's just a temperament type of thing. So you want to look at these guys that have just grinded out results on golf courses. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be so, you know, so similar in terms of golf courses. But even like Tommy Fleetwood's obviously won here and played really well at US Opens. And, you know, Francesco Molinari is the type of player you'd expect to play well at the US Open, even if he hasn't had the top results in it. Lee Westwood's played well in one as well. So I think that there is a definite style point of view in that sense. But yeah, the one I did like was the Celtic Manor, and there's so much to it, and it'll make more sense when I come on to one of my picks later on. But it's kind of the one thing I'd say about this golf course is the last two winners have been Nicholas Coulthard and Guido Migliozzi, who would probably favour distance over Axia more than anything else. And Rasmus Højgaard would certainly fit in that camp, who finished runner-up last year. But previous to that, you know, you look at the kind of Alex Norrens, Tommy Fleetwood, Tong Chai, JD, Bernd Wiesberger, Graham McDowell. Like, it was definitely an accuracy test. And I think that's a little bit to do with the time of year and the weather conditions. We had a change in schedule with the Open de France, where it moved back later in the year. And I think with it being maybe wetter, it played a little bit longer and tougher, and that's why it played into the bigger hitters' hands in recent years. So I think if it goes back to what it was earlier in, you know, years past, and in September and things like that, we could see that crossover with Celtic Manor again. And just to kind of run through this, like Nicholas Coulthard had a bit of a mixed bag of form here in France before winning. It was fourth at Celtic Manor. Joost Luitens won at Celtic Manor and finished 9th, 11th and 18th here. Peter Uihlein and Richard Sterney have been runners-up in both events, which, you know, it could be something to look into. And then when you look at the winners, Graham McDowell, Alex Norren and Tong Chai Jardy have won all those two events. So to me, there's definitely a correlation between Celtic Manor and Le Golf National. So a long way of answering your question, Ollie, that I think that there is definitely some, you know, course correlation there and a little bit of course form to factor in this week, and not just purely current form.
Okay, perfect. It sounds like also need to take in, I don't know, a bit of weather. Just having a look here, it does look like there might be some light drizzle someday. We've been watching the rugby, certainly been wet then. And as Dave said, when I went there I don't think I've ever been wetter, suck out about 2 kilometers from the clubhouse. So it is good for that. So maybe length will be needed because it's definitely not short, especially that finish, which gives some drama. Let's look at that field you mentioned with some US Open players in there. The top of the market is Tom Kim. Always exciting to see him play, even if he let you down. He's 10 to 1. Minwoo Lee's around 14s. Then last week's winner, Ryan Fox, at 14s. The runner up, Aaron Rye, 16s. And then you've got Billy Horschel there at 20 to 1, alongside Alex Bjork. And then you get into your Dietrich's, Jordan Smith's, Rasmus Højgaard, and the Ryder Cupper, Robert McIntyre, 33 to 1. So exciting field, some good names and good winners in there. Let's get into the selections. You guys can bounce off each other, but why don't we start with you, Dave, with your opening selection this week?
Yeah, I've nailed my colours to the US Open as a good form guide, so I need to obviously reflect that in my pick. So I'm going to go with Minwoo Lee, second favourite, 14 to 1. It's almost a shame there's not a few more Ryder Cuppers in there to boost his price, because I think if Ryder Cup players had been playing, I think maybe they would have been a bit distracted. You know, I don't know whether we'll say that with Robert McIntyre, but okay, he's 14 to 1, but I think, you know, he's such a classy player. Fifth in this year's US Open, Minwoo Lee, which was a great knock, and 27th in the 2022 US Open. So far, very early in his career, but this is his best major, the US Open. So I think that that bodes well. Why, maybe? Excellent temperament. He's a really good scrambler. He's 6th in scrambling this year. So this is his first look at the course, but I think it will be one that he immediately takes to. We did see him heartily applauding Ryan Fox, didn't we, at Wentworth. So that was, you know, the sort of antipodean sort of cheering each other on. Sometimes you get that, don't you, where the guys get inspired by other players similar to close to their region. In terms of current form, then, he was 7th in the Irish Open, which was a really good knock. He'd actually played well at Hoylake, just didn't see it through on the weekend. But 7th in the Irish Open, a really good 14th last week. And so he's got those scrambling skills. He's got that kind of mentality where you can dig in the US Open style conditions. And he's just a really classy player, isn't he? And with so many of the big guns not there, I think this is a real good chance for him to get a third DP World Tour win. So yeah, Minwoo Lee for me.
Yeah, I like that, Dave. I think with Minwoo Lee, like, one of the really impressive things there, and maybe it's sort of coming to your thinking, maybe not, but like, one of the standout performances for me this season from him was his effort at the Players' Championship. When you think about kind of the tactical way of playing that golf course, the amount of water and hazards that you've got at TPC Sawgrass, again, not necessarily, you know, the same course setup, but just being able to navigate that and deal with some of the bad bounces, bad breaks you would get is definitely a positive for me. So I do like that Minwoo Lee shout, even if, as you said, slightly shorter on the price, but we saw with the Gala last week, ruling people out based on odds is pretty silly these days. So wouldn't do that. Same sort of line of thinking, really, in terms of odds and people like that. Alexander Bjork.
He's my pick every week. I put him every time I'm on here. Hopefully you'll get him. You can get him over the line, Tom.
I'm happy to take the mantle, and then hopefully, Dave, it does lead to success. But I think there's a couple of things with Bjork. One, I don't know if I necessarily just feel sorry for him for the fact that he's going to have probably the best season of his career and not end with a win. But also, he's just been so consistent. Like, every single week you look at him and he seems to be up and there and in the leaderboard. Doesn't matter what the field strength these days, he seems to be in the mix. And that's just testament to what he's done this season. I don't know why he's so much better. I still think there's a little bit of this aspect of, with some of the leading DP World Tour players playing a lot more in America, it gave these kind of Bjorks and Maximilian Kiefer early in the season a little bit more freedom to play week in, week out and get positive results. And I think just confidence bled through the whole season. So I think it's been a real positive for them in that aspect. We know he struggles to get over the line, but here, 3rd, 8th and 20th in 3 starts. And the golf course that is notorious for, you know, causing some blow-ups and some disappointing finishes, the fact that he was a 54-hole leader here on debut in 2017, he was inside the top 4 after 36 holes last year, finishing 20th. I think just the way he's been playing, and I felt the same. He had a couple of good rounds at Cran-sur-Sierre, and I felt the same with Bjork there, that maybe he's just going to take that good course form and make it into excellent form with a win. And I think that's going to be the case again here at Open de France, where I think he could you know, really take advantage of his good current form and take advantage of the slightly weaker field compared to the last couple of weeks and get over the line. So Alexander Bjork for me at 20-1 is my headline selection.
Fantastic. I was going to say, let's hope you're the Bjork whisperer, because Dave, it just on repeat every time he's on here. And speaking of coincidence, I mean, last week, I think it was Minwoo Lee that I had as my who am I? And then this week, I'd already written it. In comes Dave's email, and it's your second pick, Dave. So I like we're on the same track. Who is your second selection?
Yeah, so Yannick Paul, my second selection. A guy who was kind of in the Ryder Cup discussions at one point. Obviously, there were a lot of players who were vying for those wildcard picks and automatic qualification, and he's missed out. But, you know, he could play a role in the future. But I do like his chances this week. He's not in amazing form. He's sort of ticking over. He was 45th. Nice bit of symmetry in both the Irish Open and at Wentworth. But before that, he was 20th at Kranz, 10th in the Czech Masters. So he's, you know, he's bubbling along pretty nicely. I just think maybe let's get him on a course that he really likes. He's played it just once and finished 8th, which was an excellent debut performance. I did dig out an interview that he'd done on YouTube when he was interviewed about that. He describes it as an amazing course. He says he likes it because it rewards good shots and can punish weak shots, and he likes that kind of setup. Where, you know, he put in emphasis on really good approach play, and that's one of his massive strengths. A really good scrambler as well. He's top 20 in scrambling this season and last, which is really good. He seems to like France as well as the eighth on debut last year. I was looking at his Challenge Tour form in France, and he played there twice in 2021 and was 11th both times. So good vibes and all that kind of thing. I just thought maybe, as Tom was saying, a lot of the big guns away, it's a chance for him to shine in this company. I thought 33-1 was a decent price, because I think if he'd played a little bit better at Wentworth and the Irish Open, I think we'd find him 25s and maybe even shorter. So 33-1, Yannick Paul, I thought was a reasonable each-way bet.
Yeah, he was close to me as well, Dave, and the fact that like he was 8th here last year, as you said, and it does feel like now he's kind of the other side of that disappointment in terms of missing out on the Ryder Cup. And, you know, he would have had to stare all 12 Ryder Cuppers in the face last week at Wentworth and, you know, doubly deal with the disappointment of, you know, oh, you know, you came close, but didn't quite get in. And he'll probably be looking at, you know, Rory McIntyre, who picked into that final point spot, and saying, well, actually, you're not, you know, in great form. And, you know, if I could have just held on for 2 or 3 more weeks, I'd have got that spot. And look, it's all his buts and maybes, right? But he may now just be, you know, kind of freed up and, as you said, a bit more of a suitable golf course, one where it doesn't necessarily require distance or anything like that. We're hoping with the move back to kind of September that could be a good move for Yannick Paul. So I do enjoy that. I like the pick there. I'm leaning into this Celtic Manor angle with this next one, and it is going to be having to get over the disappointment of Sunday. But Connor Syme is just playing too well. And for someone that's finished 2nd, 3rd, 8th and 18th at Celtic Manor between 2020 and 2022, I found it very hard to leave him out based on his kind of statistics as well. Look, I think Connor will be the first person to critique his own Sunday performances. You could see it in his face yesterday when he went out of bounds and went in the water a couple of times. He knew his chances were gone. He started pretty slowly before that as well and was riding his luck. But this is a player that ranks first in both approach and tees green over the last, you know, 8 weeks. He's not ranked outside the top 4 in strokes gained approach or the top 8 in tees green since coming back from the break. And he's got 4 straight top 10 finishes, and not many people will have those claims, if any, I think, in this field. And he's, you know, still 50-1 or 45-1. So for me, as someone that is becoming a little bit more forgiving of golfers, I was very much, like, you've asked me 2 years ago to rule him out completely and said he can't win, but you're slowly starting to see, and I think this is kind of why I referenced Ryan Fox at the start of the show, like, Ryan Fox is 36 years old and he's playing the best golf of his career over the last 2 years. Connor Syme's still got, you know, plenty of years ahead of him to do this. And maybe, just maybe, that the kind of experience that he suffered yesterday might just kick him on here. He has missed 2 cuts and 2 cut starts here. But as I said, I think he's playing far too well to really worry about that too much. And as I say, the Celtic Manor form I really like. So hopefully Connor Syme can put the upset of yesterday behind him and really kick on and look to win his first title.
Great. Yeah, there's nothing like dropping the goal for the week before, is there? Or early weekitis, as it's known. There's a few. So good to hear. We're going to break things up briefly here. So it's just one event. And before we get your extra two bonus picks, we're going to go into my pick, which is, of course, as part of the game of Who Am I? But let's see how we go this week with my selection. How it works is I'll give some tips. The boys will be putting their hands up, shouting out whatever they want each time. They might hold on for a one-hit wonder and trying to pick who I like this week. As mentioned, it was Paul. Had to rewrite it, and I found someone else who Paul is going to lose to as runner-up. So here we go. Starting off with my go-to favourite. I have earned just under 8.5 million euros in my career. 8.5 million. Have we got any random guesses?
What do you have to do to get 8.5 million, Tom, in these days?
Finish second about 16 times, which would be quite a stream in a couple of years.
Thomas Detton.
No, it's not Thomas, but no. Like him. Okay, now this is where we might see, Tom potentially pull away, because it is, as a student at Indiana University, I won the Big Ten Triple Crown in 2008. If you don't know what that is Big Ten Golfer of the Year, the player with the lowest scoring average, and the Big Ten Championship in there. So pretty impressive college record. Do we have any guesses?
Did you say 2010, Ollie?
So 2008.
2008.
We're going to go one more. Because of that form, I represented Europe in the Palmer Cup in 2007, 2008, and 2009. It's narrowing down. I can sense you've got age sort of area there. You've got European. Okay. This one could be it. Number four. It took me 229 attempts to win my first event on the DP World Tour.
229 attempts.
Serious. For you podcast listeners, some serious thinking.
What are we doing here, Tom? Come on.
Well, I know. Well, this is one of those ones where like it's the year that's throwing me, because yeah, it feels like it's a bit of a dead zone, isn't it? Where I don't know who's... Like 2008 is a long time ago now, isn't it? That's like what we're talking about, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So they've been pro for 13, 14 years.
Okay, well,
I've got some of the 200, yeah, that 220 odd. That's ringing a bell somewhere.
Yeah, it's sitting there. Yeah, it was a famous win for that reason. And another, and then we'll throw five in. If someone got it, we can go again. I have played in 7 major championships, but never made a cut.
And then I'll meant to make it easier, Ollie?
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, if you don't know now.
I'm going to go with Callum Shinquin.
No, not quite Callum. I can keep going with made-up clues, though. And I will give Dave a one-off guess.
You have to give his nationality, I think, before we start.
Next, I was going to go, I am from Spain.
But that brings us down to only a couple of people.
We got left in there then?
Yeah, there's just
You got Jorge Campillo.
Yeah, him then.
Yeah. that felt like a lovely first ever assist as Tom threw it up and Dave just nodded in the back of the net. It is Jorge Campillo. His 229th start was when he won the Trophy Hassan Duh back in 2019. I believe it was. Then another win, obviously, in 2020 and earlier this year as well. Jorge is my pick for
Indiana. Indiana.
And the record, Big Ten, like, incredible college record. Don't know who else was around those times, as Tom says, but very, very impressive. And good old Wikipedia and all the pages and DP World Tour website for helping me out with that. And also, if you're on the website and you don't fancy a bet, but you want to play a fancy game, perfect. You can join up there, play friends and family, make your team of 6 take on everyone to get it done. If you haven't completed your team yet, keep listening, because guys, you've got a couple more bonus picks for this week, as there's just one event. Dave, just back to back them, let us know who they are and why.
Yeah, Tom's just mentioned him actually in one of our floundering guesses. Adrian Ategui is going to be my third bet. He's 45-1. He's got the course form. If we're relying on course form, and not necessarily that we are, but he's got a 13th last time, and then before that, a 12th and a 7th. So last four starts here, 13th, 12th and 7th, which is good. Second in scrambling this season, which bodes well. His putting has been really poor, but I did note that he had positive strokes gained putting figures at Wentworth, which was good. He's a four-time winner on the DP World Tour. He won at Valderrama. That was his most recent win. Obviously, that's somewhere where you need to, you know, be mentally tough to get it done there. So, yeah, mainly the course form to sort of bump him above other rivals, but him at 45-1. And then down at 70-1, Richie Ramsey, who doesn't always play well here, but he's got a couple of top fives, so he can. And I just think he played pretty well at Wentworth. I did look at his finish because he tweeted afterwards that on the Sunday, he said, played really well today, but 18 was a killer. So I checked his scorecard. He took a six there. You know, a lot of players were birdieing that hole. But he also took a double bogey at 15. So he had a bit of a car crash finish. And even then, he was 28. So you play those holes in maybe one under, that's being a bit generous maybe, and you're pushing towards the top 10. So I think he is playing nicely. He said his game is trending in the right direction. So 71 for Richie Ramsey on a course that, if you are thinking about a bit more accuracy that's needed and it's not too long, I think he fits the bill. And those couple of top fives are evidence that he can play this course nicely. So I thought that was quite a big price for him.
Yeah, I looked at Ramsey, Dave, because I think it's one of those ones where, like, you do want a kind of veteran presence on this golf course, and he is just that, right? Like, he's a winner, he's capable of winning. He hasn't probably won as much as he would have wanted to in his career. I remember speaking to him before, and he sort of said that once the kind of hunger went away from winning, he would hang it up. And he said he was pretty close to that, I think, kind of around 2020 and 2021. So it's good to see him back and playing good golf. He's obviously had a couple of opportunities since then. So I think he's definitely the type of player you need. I think the same comments to Otegi. I think someone that's actually really kicked on over the last couple of years after, you know, a sort of middling career, I guess, if you like. He was always pretty solid, but didn't necessarily produce the fireworks when needed. So good to see him coming forward. But another one for me at 70-1, someone that's really changed his career is Nathan Kimsey, who he's just, I think he came to people's attention at the Barbasol when he had a chance to win. He obviously lost in a playoff to Vincent Norman there, and he had a chance to win his PGA Tour card. But he's been pretty solid for the last year or so, and that's based on the fact that he won twice on the Challenge Tour last season, got himself back on to the DP World Tour after a decent absence. And it's what he's done in that time. And I think he's 30 years old, but his definitive improvement in the last year or so, it really caught my eye. And one of those wins was in France, which is always a good sign. And I think he's just got the right skill set. I know we're talking about, potentially needing a bit of distance here, looking at the last couple of years. But if that is the case, and I think we're going to be slightly upset with some of our selections here. But I think he's got what he needs to do. I think he's accurate and he can plot his way around here. And that was certainly the case back in when he made his debut. It was quite a few years ago now, I think during his rookie season on DP World Tour, where he was struggling for most of the year. But he was actually second after round one and fifth going into the weekend. And okay, he finished 38th, but he's now coming back a two-time win on the Challenge Tour. He's got a great skill set. And last week at Wentworth, finished 28th, which I think is a really positive result considering he didn't have his best short game stuff. And then he was sixth in approach and 17th tee to green. So really good signs for Nathan Kimsey, a player that's been really solid since he had that chance on the PGA Tour. And I think he could really come and have a go here with the slight drop in field strength. I think it is actually a good field. You know, it's quite top heavy, but it does kind of meander off quite quickly as you go down. I think he can take advantage of that. And then my final pick is Rikuyo Hoshino from Japan, who he's done nothing but win since turning professional in 2016. So you look at it, he won on the Challenge Tour, Japanese Challenge Tour in 2017, and then he won every year on the main Japan Tour from 2018 to 2022. Two of those wins came in 2021. He lost a playoff in 2019 and 2022. So he could have really had three multiple win seasons in that kind of first 5 or 6 years as a professional. And he's actually translated that into really good DP World Tour form this season. He was sixth at the Red Isle Climber Championship at the start of the year. He was inside the top four after 54 holes at the ISPS Handa Championship back at home. And then recently he's finished third at the BMW International Open in Germany, made the cut of the Open Championship. In the past 2 weeks, he's finished 7th at the Irish Open and 25th last week at Wentworth. And he's actually 12th going into Sunday as well, which I was really impressed by. So look, I'm one of those people that really believes that form can travel, and winning form can definitely travel and translate into different events. And he's certainly showing that. So, you know, whilst we're sort of down the line of thinking of Alexander Bjork and Nathan Kimsey and that he might be a slightly shorter hitter, I liked what Dave said as well about the US Open, because that's only really further validated the Hishino pick, because his best effort in a major so far was 26th at Torrey Pines in 2021. He was actually top five after round one. So I think, again, it's just that temperament. I think you can get around these kind of major courses, this obviously not being a major course, but, you know, hosting a Ryder Cup and big events. I do think Hishino can go well. So as someone that is very capable of winning, especially at home, I think he could really surprise a few people here.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. Eight great names. And I love the different approaches. Tom diving into a lot of facts, numbers, and Dave Tindall, the millennial, I'm going to call Dave Tindall, just going onto their YouTube, looking at their tweets, what they're feeling, different approaches. And hopefully they'll all bring some profits for us. We will recap that quickly. But before we go, we have to talk Ryder Cup, because it's Ryder Cup week, literally next week. I would love to have all of our guys on, our brilliant experts, but sadly, we can't happen because there's just too many voices. So this is your chance, guys, to tell us who's going to win and why it's going to be Europe by 10 points. But Dave, let's start with you. How excited are you, especially on the back of that Wentworth performance, with all 12 European Ryder Cup players making the cut and seven inside the top 10? That must... Do you think that even like lowers the odds and helps their chances even more ahead of next week?
Well, it is lowering the odds. I think the bookies, it's almost like, because we're seeing a lot of the European guys play, they're kind of in sight, in mind, as opposed to being out of sight, out of mind. So we are seeing them just, you know, dominate leaderboards and get right in contention, and a lot of them as well. So it's partly that which makes me think, wow, all our guys are coming good. Now, I don't know, I just start looking at our guys and then looking at the American team and thinking, well, I'd rather, you know, have Hovland there. And then, you know, there's so many I'd rather have than Sam Burns, for example. I know Justin Thomas did quite well at the four tonight. He was fifth, wasn't he, I think, there. So that was quite a decent run for him. But I just think you've got to look at history, because the US are terrible, terrible travellers. They've not won on away soil since 1993. That's their only away win since 1981. Every time they've gone off as favourites on European soil this century, they've failed. You know, they were favourites at Le Golf National. That seems a bit bonkers now, but they just don't get it done. And I know they had this reconnaissance trip to Italy. Zach Johnson took them over. But even then, sort of three of them didn't go. It's sort of, I know it's probably quite useful, but, and there were, you know, mitigating circumstances. I think Jordan Spieth expecting a baby, but Schauffele and Cantlay, it's just a personal reason, so I don't know why that was the case. But it's just that record, isn't it? I know maybe it's going to change one day, but they are just poor travellers. And Europe on home soil, as the outsiders, is always, always a bet. And I just think you run your sort of finger down the team and you think, well, he's in good form. He's had a great season. Europe all day long for me at the prices, definitely.
Oh, how good to hear. Love it. Tom Jacobs, that's on sort of the player side of things, but we have touched on it. What about the course side of things? Because everyone really did write an amazing, as you say, looking back, that the US were favourites at the Golf National when we looked at the course, when this seems to be American proof. A lot of people have said the stats actually, I think they're narrowly like 0.5% straighter off the tee. So it's a bit of a myth maybe this year. From the videos you've seen, we've seen a few balls dropping in rough and everything. How do you think the course is setting up? Will it advantage Europe? And obviously the big one is the fans. By the looks of it, and some of the grandstands, incredible what they bring as well to help the European side.
Yeah, so I'll preface this by saying that I've never felt as confident about the European Ryder Cup team this year than I do right now. So that's a really positive thing. I think it does definitely give fact to what Dave said about we've just seen them a lot recently, and that's fresh in your memory. And when, you know, both Justin Thomas and Max Homer finished inside the top seven last week, you think, okay, that's quite annoying, because Justin Thomas is potentially their weak link. I think with the course, and this is something I've said all year, and I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I don't know that we necessarily have the edge on the golf course as we did like at Le Golf National. And the reason being is that at Le Golf National, we had the ability to set it up for the ball strikers exactly how we wanted to, you know, good iron and wedge players, and, you know, let them find all the water hazards that they didn't, you know, practice for and things like that, right? But I think in Italy, we've got this kind of golf course that's always kind of favoured longer hitters on the DP World Tour. And that in itself is going to, you know, lean towards Americans potentially. Now, our best players are big drivers of the golf ball. And I think we're so Americanized as a European team now that I don't think there's a stark difference between what both teams want in golf courses now. So if you think about our best players, which is Rory, Rahm and Hovland, I mean, they all want to be able to unleash driver, you know, early and often, right? Fitzpatrick is someone that was, you know, a bit of a throwback. He now wants big distance courses. I think you've still got the Hattons and the Fleetwoods, the Roses, the Strackers, who can, you know, necessarily play on kind of more accurate things. But I think if we were to set out like we did in France to catch them out, I think that would actually be doing ourselves a disservice. So I do think we're in good shape. I think that it was particularly pleasing to see Åberg win before getting his pick, because I feel really good about him going out with Rory as a rookie and that team being quite electric. And just look, like there was a post, and this is nothing to do with like where they are on the teams or anything like that, but this is just how it was laid out from, I think it was Golf Digest and their Instagram account. They've kind of put the European on one side and the USA team the other. And it was like Scheffler one side against Rory. Well, I'd probably pick Rory out of those two. I'd pick Rahm over Patrick Cantlay, Hovland over Schauffele. Then it starts to get a little bit trickier, because I would take Homer over Fitzpatrick. I'd take Hatton over Harman, Fleetwood over Clark. Stracker and Spieth a little bit of a throw up, I think, at the moment, because Spieth's not necessarily firing on all cylinders, but I think you'd give it to Spieth. Rose and Koepka, again, a little bit awkward. You'd probably have to give it to Koepka with the major prowess at the moment. Morikawa and Lowry, I'd give the edge to Morikawa slightly. But then the kind of bottom is really weird, because as you said, there's Sam Burns that I don't know what to expect really. And he's up against, you know, he's not up against, but in this kind of theoretical thing that I've done here is Robert McIntyre, who I think both of them could be real wild cards and maybe not even play that much. Fowler and Nicolai Højgaard have both been impressive all season. And then you're with Justin Thomas and Ludvig Åberg. So when you look at them just head to head, I think I actually prefer Europe from an individual standpoint. It's going to be so important how we find those partners, because I think that the US pairings are very, very obvious, like who they're going to put together. I think Sam Burns is only really on the team because of his relationship with Scottie Scheffler. Cantlay and Schauffele will go together, probably Homer and Morikawa. So I think they're more obvious. I could see someone like Koepka and Wyndham Clark going together. I think it becomes really tricky when you think about how to partner the European side up. So if we can get that right, that's going to be a difference, I think, because, you know, to a man, I think we're absolutely capable, and obviously we've got the European support. So long way of saying, I think we're in a great position. It just comes down to the pairings.
I think as well, which were big factors at Celtic Manor and Le Golf National, a lot of the Europeans have played the course and done well there. And if you go through course form that there's been in the Italian Open, so Højgaard won there in 2021. He was fifth this year. McIntyre won in 2022. Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood have both run us up at Marco Simone. Rory's played it once and was fourth. Tyrrell Hatton's been eighth. So there's a lot of Europeans who are going there to a course where they've already done well. And I think that counted for quite a lot at Le Golf National. It even worked out, didn't it, for the one American who bothered to come over and done quite well, Justin Thomas. He was their top point scorer.
Absolutely.
So the fact that they've got this course edge, I mean, it's a really obvious point, but I think it could be quite a decisive one.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I loved hearing the head take. I'll be very excited, Tom. So I'm going to put you both on the spot now, because as I said, we haven't got you next week. But these don't have to be official tips, but I got to get predictions from you. So it can be a player you like or just a score. But Guy, what's a one thing you've caught your eye or looked at? I'll come to you first, Tom.
Yeah, so I think for me, I'm going to go with the other side just to kind of keep myself not to bet on the USA, but to in their market, just so I don't have to be sort of downhearted when Europe comes out with their pairings. I'm going to go with Max Homer to be the top USA point scorer. And my rationale behind that, one, I think he's just playing tremendously well anyway, and he's going to be a huge asset. He played really well at the President's Cup, scored a lot of points there. And I think he's got a very obvious pairing in Colin Morikawa. They both seem to be, you know, they get on great. They're both Californians, unless that's kind of overplayed a little bit and they're not the perfect kind of partnership. But I think he could play a lot, and his presence cut form suggests that he, you know, does well in the team event. So we saw what Morikawa did in his first Ryder Cup and how well he played. So I think he could bring Max Homer on. So if they play together, it could be one of those two that I think could be the top point scorer, and I'll go with Max Homer.
Good stuff. Okay. And what about you, Dave?
I'll throw a couple of score lines out. Yes. I think you could win this handily. So I'm going to throw out 16-12 as a possibility. And then I'll go just inside that. So I'll go 15.5-12.5. That's possible, right? Isn't it? I don't want to get that wrong. That's a thing, isn't it? Add it up to 28. And as obvious as this is, I think John Rahm, he was brilliant at the start of the year, won the Masters, had a bit of a sort of dip. I think he's just starting to peak again. So as obvious as it sounds, John Rahm to be the total event point scorer, you get slightly better odds than that than just backing him to be top European. So I think John Rahm, I think he'll play every game and might well come out with 4 points, 4.5 points, and that could be enough to win that market. So I'm fully behind Rahm to lead home a fantastic European victory.
Okay, love that. They're both around 10-11 to 1, that. So that's Homer, top points for the US, and Rahm for the event itself. That's beautiful. Love to hear it. There's positivity. Tiny bit more from Dave, but Tom's still feeling good. Homer can get 4.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. I'm quite a pessimistic person by nature. That's probably betting that's done that to me. But I think for me, I'd rather be on that side, because when Europe then do what they've spelled out there, then I'm going to be absolutely elated. And look, I really do think if you'd have asked me this question 6 months ago, Ollie, I'd have said we've got no chance. Forget the course setup, forget the European advantage, everything. I'd have expected a Whistling Straits repeat. I think they were just too good. But all of a sudden, the dynamics of how some of the players have got onto the team for the US and just the form of even just our top three or five players, I think we will rely heavily on those guys. But yeah, I feel very positive. And if I feel very positive, then we should feel good about our chances.
I mean, if you're a Europe, say like us, we want Europe to win. We can say that, can't we? Isn't it? We are biased. We're Europeans. We want Europe to win. Imagine doing all this research and deciding after hours and hours of research, okay, I think the US are going to win. Imagine cheering on an even money shot that you don't want to win and somehow getting – it's just no fun. And you could win off an even money shot by backing a two-ball in the Dutch Open and get the same financial reward and have a much happier time. Imagine sort of going against what you want to happen. So unless – I can't see why you would back – the Americans, if you're European and are invested in, you know, in your winning the trophy. So I just think always if they're you know, favourites on European soil, it's a duff bet. It's a road to the poorhouse. Famous last words, maybe, but I think when you can back them at this sort of price, take it.
Love it. We could wax lyrical all day, but that, thank you very much, gents. That is time on that. And what's going to happen is, what's it going to be then? 24-4, Rahm and Homer don't face each other. And that's the final scoreline. Everyone's a winner, with Homer winning the 4 points basically on Friday and Saturday. Beautiful, right? Before we say goodbye, we'll quickly recap all the tips from the guys now. Time now to quickly recap all those tips from Tom and Dave at the Kazoo Open de France. Starting with Tom, he opened up with Alexander Bjork at 20-1 and Connor Syme at 45-1, with Nathan Kimsey at 70-1 and Rikuya Hoshino at 80-1, finalising his quartet. And Dave Tindall likes Minwoo Lee at 14-1, Yannick Paul at 33s, then Adrian Ategi at 45-1, and rounded off by the Scot Richie Ramsey at 70-1. Yes, a huge thank you to this week's guests, Tom and Dave, for your fantastic insights. this week on both the Gazoo Open de France and the Ryder Cup. Tom is on Twitter at TomJacobs93. Thanks, Tom. Look forward to seeing how you go this week and good luck with it all. And Dave is on Twitter at DaveTyndallGolf. Thank you, Dave. Hopefully another winner after the gala as well. But guys, make sure you will join us next week for the big one. It's the best event in the golfing calendar. It's the Ryder Cup. We've waited 2 years for this, and I'm very much looking forward to watching our boys get revenge on the Americans. So until then, enjoy the golf in France this week. Good luck with your picks, and see you next time on The Tips.